Welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Thanks for joining me today in another edition of your Economic Forum. My name's Mark Cunaberti, as I said, and welcome to show 331. Happy 4th of July, July 2021, July 1st. So there you go. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as individual investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. And the opinions expressed herein are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect any public media source, including this station, their staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money. As money is matter, and matters money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack or abundance of it. It's about your lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. So the Dow pushing to new highs as the Dow Jones Industrial Average flirt with all-time highs. Investors and advisors alike might be miffed. Are you miffed? Confused as why your portfolio balances just bounce around like a proverbial ping pong ball, but they don't quite attain the sky-high valuations that you see on the evening news? Just why some portfolios have not mirrored the stratospheric heights that the Dow has attained can have an elusive answer. Hopefully I'll give it to you today. COVID-19 has definitely caused some of the broader market averages to pick and choose its winners and losers. And unlike some previous market rebounds, the COVID tide has not lifted all stock boats for sure. Unlike 08 and 09, where the market obliteration that happened then was followed by almost a market-wide ballistic rebound. And then when Trump got elected in 2016, that also put a match under just about every asset class in the stock market. The COVID rebound in the markets has launched some stocks into seemingly uninterrupted rallies, while other stocks languished. And have you seen that in your portfolio? Well, I can say more than a few investors and advisors have. In my opinion, this COVID rebound that we've been seeing that continues to push higher has not been an index buyer's friend. I hope you know what I mean by that. Simply put, the rebound we have seen has been a stock picker's rebound, if you pick the right stocks. But bipolar stock rotations have perplexed more than a few stock market participants as they watch CNBC reporting blistering rallies in the Dow, all while wondering why their portfolios have not kept up in lockstep. While most investors just buy a handful of all-inclusive funds like mutuals, many of the companies in these broader baskets have not seen the increases the overall Dow index may have witnessed, and some may have even gone down. The explanation, at least my opinion, lies in the consumer buying patterns that have been altered due to COVID and its subsequent shutdowns. The consumer, you and I, have seen our life turned upside down with COVID, and procuring their needs while being shut in has required new solutions. Examples of these altered buying patterns that we have been going through are everywhere. Stay-at-home procurement conduits such as web shopping, home delivery, saw skyrocketing demand. Our usual gathering places such as restaurants, bars, vacation destinations, sporting events, and similar venues were, for the most part, off limits to us. Companies that offered such wares or supplied goods or services to such establishments also suffered. Small businesses were also decimated, as were the vendors that serviced them. And although people, you and I, still needed to procure our day-to-day essentials and discretionary needs, how we procured them was drastically altered. It was as if a huge tide had shifted in an historic way in both its methodology and the dollar amounts that preceded it. How we got our stuff that we needed and wanted changed. As such, while some businesses collapsed, others could not keep up with the demand. Since broad index funds may have encompassed both the lucky and the unlucky, however, if you bought a basket of these stocks in certain funds, certain asset areas, maybe it made headway, but it probably made any substantial headway difficult. In other words, if you bought a broad index, half the businesses in that index fund were probably not going to be there, or at least have severe troubles and the stocks would go down. Half the businesses in these broad funds saw their stock prices implode, while the other half saw astonishing increases. Since these broad-based indexes may have encompassed both the lucky and the unlucky, buying a basket of stocks in certain funds might not have been a good idea. Since the Dow Jones is the most talked about index on the evening news, and the makeup of the Dow and how it is constructed may have skewed its movements upward, and we'll talk about how the Dow may be constructed and how it will be skewed in a later show. But the Dow may not be a true reflection of overall economic conditions. Meanwhile, the Dow has almost doubled from the COVID March 2020 lows. And while that has happened, the unemployment rate is still very high at 4.5%. And some estimate 25% of small businesses have been wiped clean by the wrath of God. That is a Indiana Jones line right there. Wiped clean from COVID, should I say, or the shutdowns. Keeping in mind, small business is about 50% of GDP. GDP is the total money exchange for all goods and services in the states. That the Dow has seen such increases, almost a double, may have indeed perplexed many investors and their advisors. Simply put, like I said, the Dow may not accurately represent the economy. So comparing your portfolio performance to the Dow that you see on the TV may not be a fair comparison. More importantly, COVID-19 has challenged the traditional broad-based buying that has been the mainstay of investors, advisors alike. Just buy a basket of mutual funds. The usual migration by the typical advisor and the mom-and-pop investor to mutual funds and exchange-traded funds, what we now know as ETFs, may not have paid off nor kept up with the certain broad-based indexes that you see on TV. In conclusion, the best term I can use to describe last year's market is a stock picker's paradise, and you better have been good at it. It also may have been a broad-based fund buyer's frustration. At such a time last year, blindly buying these broad-based funds may not have been the best strategy. Knowing where consumers, us, knowing where we were flocking to, and knowing the places we were not flocking to may have been a more profitable path to riches. There you go. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters. And welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberdi. So I get asked a lot of questions. How high can it go? Right? From the March 2020 COVID low of the Dow 18,000s, the index has recently breached 34,000. 3,000 more points or even less will make a double. Considering the massive damage done to world economies from the imposed shutdowns on both business and travel, the possibility that the Dow would reach such a milestone as a double is indeed perplexing to some, if not outright bordering on the unbelievable. Gaining another 3,000 points or even 2,000 points from here is not a given by any stretch, but the fact of the matter is the Dow is even close to a double. In the face of such economic calamity, begs some sort of explanation. How did that happen? Analysts everywhere have given their opinion on how and why we see an incredible rally in stocks given the circumstances. We can comfortably conclude we will never know the exact reasons for the astonishing increase in the stock market. We can guess. The cross currents of the markets and the aggregate whims of investor sentiment can never be scientifically explained. Hence, it is the reason economics is more of a study of sociology than of science. Remember, the difference between a scientific conclusion, which can be replicated, and its equations recorded and categorized. The market movements are just the sum of all the investor beliefs and whims at any given time. As such, nothing can ever be concluded where the human psyche is involved, and the human psyche is the majority of things going on in the stock market. Do I buy? Do I sell? Do I hold? The next question is, how high can it go? I can tell you that no one can tell you. They can't tell you how high, how long, or whether it will fall, how fast it'll fall, or if anything happens at all. It could be flat. Whatever the direction the markets end up going, that will solely depend on the psyche of all the players in it, the beliefs and subsequent actions of the billions of players in the market. As such, forecasting market direction is akin to knowing the exact path a leaf will take during a windstorm. Try that one. No amount of physics could make you able to track that. Without knowing the exact reasons for the stunning rally that we've seen in stocks, we cannot know where the markets will go tomorrow, next week, or next year. Keeping this fact in mind, you, as an investor, can take a variety of actions in your portfolios. You can do nothing. You can sell everything immediately. You can sell some of it immediately. You can sell some or all of it when they hit a predetermined set point. I will get out if. You can buy more right now. You could buy more at a predetermined point. Or you can hedge. You buy opposing positions as best you can to hedge up and down, kind of like a teeter-totter. In my experience, many investors and advisors opt for number one, refreshing your memory, aka, do nothing. Moreover, I can comfortably say the majority of economic news outlets lean into the same suggestion. In other words, hold for the long term. Past readers of Money Matter articles and you listeners know I am not a wholehearted supporter of hold for the long term because I do not know how much long I have left in my term, and truthfully, neither do you. Hold for the long term also assumes markets always come back. However, as advisors, there are restrictions from authorities that a licensed advisor can never guarantee market movements of any kind. Which means, really? You can't say markets always come back. Markets always will come back until they don't. One day, I can comfortably say the market won't come back. I can say one day the earth probably won't be here. So I can say that. You can do select number two, hold for the long term. The reason why I don't hold for the long term is the pain and stress of a severe market crash can be excruciating. Those of you that went through the COVID shutdown, March 2020, 18, 2018, 2008, 2009, there have been many periods where the market got obliterated. When it happens, you know how painful it can be. It will translate to unhealthy stress on your life, detrimental to your health, marriage, well-being, and possibly even your life. And then, of course, there's the old buy low and sell high. That's an old market adage. You've heard that, right? Buy low and sell high. I've never heard one that says ride them wherever they go. Never heard that, right? I will leave it to the imagination how ride them wherever they go may not be such a good suggestion. However, if you buy low and sell high, buying stocks when they're all beat up and riding them higher means profits and selling profits so you can get dry powder. You can't buy low and sell high if you don't have dry powder. Much like leaving a slot machine when you have lost enough money, my strategy that I recommend centers around four. Buy low, sell high. That's what we attempt. Not ride them wherever we go. Basically, it's simply knowing when to get out of Dodge. In other words, leaving the casino when you've lost enough money rather than keep pulling the handle, all while watching your bank account dissolve into the nothingness of a market crash. We'll be right back with more of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Welcome back to Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Your economic forum today. How is everyone? We're about two-thirds through the show. We're on a COVID-reduced show. Have been since about March of 2020. Used to be an hour, first and third Mondays, I believe, at noon. But our governor, Gavin Newsom, takes the noon spot, or used to update the world on what's happening in the seventh largest economy in the world, California. So as a result, and because we could not go into the studio, this is a condensed 29-minute version, which is okay. Pre-recorded, but hey, we're going live. We're coming back. We're going live pretty soon from what I understand. So I'm looking forward to that. Now, there is an interesting development that I follow that you probably haven't heard about that's happening in the Federal Repurchase Agreement operation. What's that? Repo, R-E-P-O. It doesn't mean come back and take your car, repossess your car. The repo market has things happening in it called open market operations. Just to be official, the repo market is administered by the Federal Open Market Committee. Administered by the Federal Open Market Committee, also known as the FOMC. Okay, now we got all that out of the way. Let's figure out what is going on. The repo market is a federal facility that moves cash in and out of the banking system on a daily basis to satisfy liquidity requirements. Think of the system as requiring food. That food is money, cash. And the repo market is the restaurant. When financial institutions like banks and money market funds and other big players that are authorized to use this big facility, big companies and big money centers need day-to-day cash. They spend a lot of money during a day. And to fund their operations, and they're so big, borrowing, lending money, taking money back in. There's a lot of cash sloshing around. So they can borrow money or put money into the repo facility. In other words, if we take in a lot of money one day, we got to store it somewhere where it's safe. Can't just put it in a safe, a deposit box or something. They have billions of money, so they got to park it somewhere. So they park it in the repo market. So they can park money there. Or if one day they said, gee, we got a lot of money, a lot of people redeeming a lot of funds, we got a lot of people taking money out, we need more cash, they can go there and borrow money from the repo facility. When they borrow money from the repo facility, they say, we need $400 billion today. So they borrow it overnight. It is. It's overnight. It's called the overnight repo market. They borrow money, and as collateral, they give them U.S. Treasuries. U.S. Treasuries are IOUs from the U.S. Treasury Department. U.S. Treasury Department may go to Bank Yakety Yak and say, hey, we need, you know, $500 billion to pay for infrastructure or whatever. And the bank will say, okay, here's $500 billion, and the Treasury will give them Treasuries, and their IOUs. We owe you $500 million or $500 billion. So when they borrow money, called a repo transaction, they give the Federal Reserve the Treasuries as IOUs. Here's my Treasury. I owe you this money. That's called a repo transaction. Now, if they want, if they have too much cash, they can put money into the repo facility. Here, I'll give you $500 million. And the Federal Reserve will give them the Treasuries as their receipt. Hey, I gave you $500 million, Mr. Fed. Mr. Fed says, okay, Mr. Bank, here are the Treasuries as collateral. So we have receipts. So you give me cash, I give you a receipt called Treasury. I take cash, I give you a receipt called Treasury. When they do it the other way, when they deposit cash in this system, it's called a reverse repo, right? Because it's opposite of what a repo is. Repo is you borrow money. A reverse repo is when you put money in. So the repo markets, money's coming in and out all day, and then it sits overnight, and then it starts up again the next day. The financial institutions, there are many of them that are authorized to use this. If they're big, you're probably going to be authorized. And what you do is your agreement is you'll keep a lot of treasuries on hand in case you need cash. You'll give them the treasuries. And if the Fed needs to put cash into the system, they will borrow cash from you and give you treasuries. Overnight, repurchase agreements. You think of it as a huge octopus handing money out and taking money in all day long and all night long. The financial institutions use this facility as needed and, as I said, to fund their day-to-day operations. Feds also use this facility to inject more cash into the system. Huh? Well, when the economy slows, the Feds will print up a lot of money. And they want to get it out into the system. But the Fed has no conduit. They have no way of getting cash to you and me and everybody in the planet, or let's say the states. They have no way to do that. They could send you a check, but it takes too long. So what the Feds do and are part of the agreement between the facilities that use the repo market and the Feds, is they say, if we want to put cash into the system, Mr. Bank, we are going to give you cash. And you are going to give us treasuries back. So if the banks need to borrow money, they'll take money. But the Feds also say, we need to put money in the system. So we're to give you money, whether you need it or not. So that's a repo transaction. And the bank will give the Feds treasuries as a receipt. And the Feds give the banks cash, and the banks immediately lend it out. And when they lend out all this cash into the system, they stimulate the economy more. They just throw cash into the system, and then there's more money floating around, and people buy stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. So kind of like the unemployment checks, all the checks that are going out right now, the economy is kind of picking up because all this money's floating around. So the Feds will give cash to the banks if they need to juice things up. They will reverse that if they need to slow things down. In other words, say, well, we got too much inflation, the economy's running too hot, so give us some of your cash and we will give you treasuries as a receipt. Gassing the economy might occur when the economy is ailing, and breaking the economy maybe may occur if its inflation takes off. When the Feds park excess cash at the facility, when financial institutions park cash at the Fed, they earn a little bit of interest. Maybe not at all, but it's at the Fed's discretion. But it's a safe place to park cash and earn a little bit of interest. When the financial institutions need cash and, in essence, borrow cash, they use treasuries as collateral and they pay a little bit of interest to the Fed. I borrow a little bit of money from you, I'm going to pay a little interest. The interest that the Feds charge can be raised or lowered. And if they raise the interest rate, it slows down the economy because the banks won't borrow as much to put into the system. If they lower the rate, the banks will borrow more because they can loan it out and make more money. So they can lower or raise the interest rate, and they can also put money in or put money out as needed to gas the economy. Think of it as a gas pedal. Now, during these high withdrawal periods when the economy's ailing and the bank institutions have to have a lot of money, the Fed sometimes have to supplement the repo market by pouring money into it. They print money and they pour it into it. They supplement the repo market. The repo market usually operates on its own, money going in and out from all the institutions, and it doesn't need supplementation. But it does on occasion. In 08 and 09, they put a lot of money in. They supplemented it a lot because a lot of people were taking out money. And during 08 and 09, they also relaxed the collateral. They said, hey, you can not only can give us treasuries, you can give us mortgages, you can give us corporate bonds. They relaxed that. They said, give us whatever you want and we'll give you money. That kind of went outside the Fed repo market mandate, but we'll talk about that another day. But usually the market operates in some sort of balance. The Feds don't have to mess with it. They don't have to add money into it or nothing. Usually the repo market, the money comes out. So the banks are always taking money out and then they put it back in the next night. They take money out because they need a lot of cash to operate. Rarely does the ebb and flow go the other way. Rarely is there a lot more cash going in to the repo market than coming out. It's usually the other way around. The banks always need money, so they're always borrowing out of it. And they rarely have an excess of cash. Not so in recent weeks. Financial institutions have been pouring billions into the repo market. They are flush with cash. And they have parked close to $500 billion of excess funds in the repo market. And more is coming in every day. This is a change from a few short months ago where the repo market was seeing, you know, a lot of financial institutions taking cash out. Now, for the last month or so, we're seeing tons of cash go into the repo market, and we're trying to figure out why. Theories abound as to why these money institutions have so much cash right now. That kind of ranges from the Fed stimulus programs kind of floating out everywhere to consumer and businesses apparently spending a lot of money to amounts of cash from the unemployment checks to amounts of cash from the Fed bailing out the banks, whatever it is. Or it could be a shortage of treasuries just floating around because they're all used up. Whatever it is, there's a lot of cash going into the repo market. Now, the repo market is a bellwether for stress in the financial system. And right now, since there's so much money in it from the banks, the banking system may be, for some reason, doing just fine. That does it for today's show. Remember, opinions in this show are my opinions only and may not necessarily reflect those of the station and staff, management, or underwriters, and is not meant as investment advice. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station, and past shows are there. I hold California Insurance License OL34249, and am a Medicare-approved agent in the state of California. That's my disclaimer. My name is Mark Cooney-Birdie. I look forward to talking to you next time on Money Matters. Have a great day.